Once upon a time, an FCC chief called television a vast wasteland. Well, not too much has changed since then, except for an occasional burst of life. And one of the only live, and certainly most alive, weekly television shows is Saturday Night Live. And out of Saturday Night Live has come an array of characters familiar to us all. The Coneheads, Saturday Night Samurai, Roseanne Dana, and those wild and crazy guys, to name just a few. One night last year, we were introduced to two new dark characters. They were dressed in black suits, white shirts, skinny black ties, shades, and lids. The Blues Brothers, Jake on vocals and Elwood on harp. They had come to remind us of a fascinating music we rarely hear today. You're hearing some of it behind me right now. The Blues Brothers are Dan Aykroyd, Elwood, and John Belushi, Jake. A few weeks ago, Aykroyd and Belushi and I sat around in what John Belushi calls the vault, or the sound room. It's a small room in John's New York City home, with carpeting covering the floor, the walls, and the ceiling. The room contains thousands of records in and out of their jackets, on shelves, on the floor, in corners, and under the couch. A superior sound system, an electric guitar, empty beer and pop cans, and an assortment of cigarette butts. It had what one would call that lived-in look. After about an hour or so of listening to records passionately selected for us by Aykroyd and Belushi, we asked them where this passion for the blues started. John Belushi was the first to answer.
I had like my own club, you know, where I would hire groups, and Dan Fogelberg worked for us, you know, way back. And he'd like open up for us, and we'd like work for like $7 a show. And I'd always put it in my satire, you know, so I figured I was accepted, and acting was a little easier. I mean, I got the jobs. It was a steadier gig. I could do it. I wanted to do it. I didn't have to...
Maybe you weren't that good a drummer.
No. I don't know.
I don't do it anymore. I did play with the Dead Boys though once.
Did you play with the Dead Boys?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I played it to Johnny Blitz benefit. So I played a couple songs there. But so it was mostly like white rock and roll that I was into for a lot of years, you know. And... you couldn't really get into it, even though I was acting. There was nothing I could really like change. I mean, how can I be better than the Allman Brothers, right, you know, or something? You know, geez. So, like, it seems a lot of music just stopped around 1973. You know,
it's true, but it's all coming back again, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, it goes in cycles. Uh-huh. But so, I just got tired of listening to it. I just found myself listening to all my old albums, and some new ones, you know. I got turned down to blues when I was filming Animal House in Eugene, Oregon. I mean, really into it, you know what I mean?
But we'd done before.
Oh yeah, we did it on the show.
That's
before,
right.
He met this guy called Curtis Salgado, who had an amazing collection of blues and was in one of these small label blues bands, like Downchild Blues Band from Toronto.
Yeah.
Lamont Cranston Blues Band from Minnesota. These are hardcore road groups that go on the road. They've got horns, they travel, they do roadhouses, they do bars. And nobody's heard of them, you know, except people who like the blues and look for them, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like they haven't really broken nationally, you know?
They haven't got the access that we have.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Well, so anyway, we were inspired by this, and we did the Blues Brothers warming up the audience on Saturday night. They'd come in for a dress show and an air show. We'd go out and do a couple of songs.
I didn't know what it was.
So he wanted to hear it, and we learned it, and we did it on the show. Then he went off to film Animal House. I stayed. I could have been in that movie.
Then
Whale. I stayed to write the show, you know? I wanted to write Saturday Night. I made that decision. He went off to do it, and he came back all turned on to the blues, you know, screaming about the blues. I was going, John, you know.
I know.
What have I been telling
you?
Where have I been? Well, I mean, I've been listening to it, you know, because also early Stone stuff was R&B, you know, but I have the typical image that most people have, you know, of the blues. It's that it's boring, it's this, but it's very funny, you know, they don't understand. And it's fun. So this is a whole new area that it started to excite me, so I figured, geez, if it excites me so much, it must excite other people.
Really, because
boring.
You're a boring guy.
Boring guy. I'm excited. What the hell? Probably everybody will be excited. Who knows? So,
and the people
I spent the last year when I wasn't working, you know, carrying around trying to learn as much as I could, you know, about blues. I mean, people had learned. You know, I'd ask people about it. They said, "Oh God, I know all that stuff." You know, I learned that, you know, 1961.
Yeah, because everybody, every player alive now.
I was trading baseball cards at that time. I didn't know anything.
Exactly,
about
and every player alive now, you know, from all the bands, that's where they got their roots.
That's right. So it wasn't my roots. You know, it was like white rock and roll into, you know, black blues back. You know, it was a step.
You're totally into it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was looking around the records you have in your room here. And it's just
I spent a lot of money getting these records that I bought them at the time. It'd be a lot easier, but I buy as many as I can and listen to as much as I can. But I spent a whole year listening. I mean, I drive my friends nuts, you know. I'd carry albums with me when I would just go see somebody, or I'd go to work, or cassettes, and keep listening and finding. And it took a year to find the right, to pick 12 songs. It took that long to find the right ones.
What is it about the blues that gets you so turned on? Could you verbalize it, or is it just, you know?
It's more emotion. I don't know what it is.
It's pure emotion.
Really pure
emotion,
rhythm. Pure, you know? Pure
rhythm. Rhythm and motion.
Shake
and
it up, you know? It's, I guess.
And it seems easier, you know, that, you know, it's simple music, you know?
I think it's the same thing that rock and roll basically is.
Sure,
primitive kind of thing.
Right.
I mean, rock and roll is based on the blues. Right?
Absolutely.
I know.
I don't know. The song that Cripple Clarence Lofton did.
1936, he did
36,
that.
But that song, you know, the written lyrics even predate that. I mean, and the version that he does is totally unrecognizable from the version you've heard Willie Maybon do and the one we do, you know.
And Lattimore, there are a lot of people who do it. Ray Charles does that. Mm-hmm. But
which song are you talking about on the album?
I don't know.
See, the concepts of, like, mojo or you know, like, blues with a
standard
feeling,
those
old standard songs, they go back to the 20s, from these country slide guitar players and harp players, you know?
All these guys just got the shaft in their record companies, you know, and these rock bands just take the music and become famous. I mean, when the Stones did the show, Mick Jagger came down here in this vault here, you know, and we played some of this stuff for him, and then he would go into the albums and put on these songs for me.
That inspired him.
Take out some insurance, you know, mm-hmm. Jimmy Reed, mm-hmm. you know, and wear something green, you know, stuff like that. He's getting, you know. And they started out as a rhythm and blues band. That's all they wanted to do. You know, they progressed into that. We're starting out as a rhythm and blues
Brian
band.
Well, Brian played that great blues harp, right?
Sure.
Oh, for
That's
sure. And Ronnie Wood plays a great harp, too. Mm-hmm.
And they love that stuff, you know, and so do we. And, like, so we got, what we did with the Blues Brothers, we put the group together, we got the best musicians in the world doing the simplest music. And we said, you know, do whatever you want, guys, you know, have fun.
Steve Cropper, Duck Dunn, they're producers now, essentially. They were the... You know, the string section, the backbone of Stax Records for a while.
Yeah, Sam and Dave, and
Soul
Nelson
Band.
Pickett. And,
they did Soul
sure,
Band.
Absolutely. They're
the
giants.
The Barclays, all that stuff.
The MGs, Booker T and the MGs.
99 and a half begins Groove Me, which is originally a Floyd Dixon tune, which we changed to a reggae tune during the middle of rehearsal. Because I couldn't do it like Floyd Dixon. I couldn't understand why I couldn't get the vocal down. And then I just, right in the middle of the song during rehearsal, I changed the accent into a Jamaican accent.
And it worked.
And it felt good.
And we threw all those things we knew about Jamaica, you know, man.
We said Jamaica, me and Danny.
And we like
that.
Did
you have some spliff at the rehearsal hall?
Some spliffs, man. Well, that song is for those people who like the spliffs, you know, man.
The red, man.
I mean, here you are on television every week. But what I'm getting from you is that underneath all, the biggest fantasy is to be a rock and roll star.
That's it, pal.
I must say, I gotta lay back here. Maybe that's your fantasy.
It was the only way I thought I could get the girls, you know? It was either... It's kind of like the way to...
It's not a common one. I must clarify here. That's not one that I share, you know?
I'll tell you what. I was involved in it. You know, it was like I liked the music and I liked doing it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And my real big influence that time was like the Rolling Stones.
The Blues Brothers fills a real vacuum in the whole musical space.
If people play the record and buy it, I think it's a party album, you know, primarily.
I don't know what?
And there's some, you know, it's not all pure straight music. Like there are a couple of cuts on the album that are definitely made to. You know, they're sort of insane to make people laugh, I think. You know, I mean, Groove Me is that way. Rubber Biscuits that way.
You know.
There's a rap in I Don't Know. There's a rap in Messing with the
Kid.
But
that's what blues is. You know, it's funny. It's humor.
Well, I think we're ready for a blues revival because everything, you know, whatever goes around comes around.
I hope it helps.
Really, there's so many. And I hope it helps the people who are playing in blues today who are still happening. Like, Muddy's out there. You know, he's happening. He's at the bottom line. You can see Muddy Waters. You can see Albert King. You know,
Fenton Robinson.
Lightning Hopkins.
Hopkins.
John Lee Hooker. He'll come to your town and play Boogie Chillin'. I mean, he'll do it, you know. It's like they're around. They're accessible. Bookers, you know.
These are impassioned guys.
Yeah, you got to do that. I mean, so we got excited. I mean, we were excited about it. Maybe we're a little naive, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, we're white bread naive.
Cynical,
white is what we are.
A lot of cynical people in the rock business, you know what I mean? And because I guess we're just as naive as we are, we just said, gosh, let's do a blues album. And we did it.
Now, I know you're both into the blues, and you said you come from rock and roll.
Right.
Are you a big rock and roll fan, Danny?
As I say, you know, mainly it was trying to catch whatever soul or R&B shows mm-hmm. came through Montreal or the area that I was living in, you know. And jukeboxes mainly, and, you know, like Mustang Sally, I gotta say. Mm-hmm. I love Mustang mm-hmm. Sally. That's where my head's at, you know. Yeah.
So, you've always been into
it. I never heard of the Allman Brothers before he turned me, because I'm from Canada, you know, we're all ice heads up there. We're half frozen half the time, you know. the lobe falls asleep, and that's it, you know. So
you'll
he turned
again
me on
in the spring.
Yeah, right, exactly. Thaw time. He turned me on to the Allman Brothers. I'd never heard Southbound until we took a drive down south. He played it in the tape.
Did you like it?
It was a symphony. Yeah. It was fantastic.
You know,
I was hearing real American music, on a modern scale for the first time, you know.
But that's mostly blues, you know, but more...
The monkeys is what we got up north, you know what I mean?
John, somebody told me that you were a big Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin fan.
He is a heavy metal freak. He won't admit it now.
Yeah, when we walked in here, the record that was on the turntable was Black Sabbath.
Oh, yeah.
I gotta tell you that.
Sure.
On John Belushi's record player, that was what was sitting there. Are there standout shows in each of your minds? Are there little gems that stand out in your mind?
Every show, every one of those Saturday nights has got like a real turkey or a couple of turkeys in it and a couple of gems, you know? Every writer, if he chooses to, can produce his own piece.
Right.
Go out there, and that's what Lorne Michaels has done. He's given everybody, he's saying, listen, these are the facilities you can learn how to produce if you want.
That's what we did with the Blues Brothers. I mean, we said we got the contract to do it. Then it was, we would do just what we want to do. We'd do what we want to do. Like, if anybody suggested, well, we want to do this song, I'd listen to everybody. You know, we listen to who to get for the group, what group to get, mm-hmm. and say, yes, and then go and do what we wanted to on our own. You can't be forced to say, have to make a single.
We had a meeting.
Either we've got the goods mm-hmm. or we don't have mm-hmm. the goods. You do what you do. You can't try something that
but on a particular show isn't like time allotted to each one of you, because like everybody gets a spot.
Oh, you mean on Saturday Night Show?
On Saturday Night
Not
Show.
Not sometimes.
On Saturday Night Show.
It depends how it's written.
Depends.
You know, it depends who gets what and how the writers feel, who can do the best job in whatever scene, you know.
Sometimes I like to do as little as possible, because there was last year I was flying back and forth to the movies, and I just said, please don't give me anything.
But this season you've been doing quite a bit on the first bunch of shows.
Yeah, they've been throwing me in there.
Oh, sure.
People
like
who are into
barbed wire.
Into Saturday Night Live are so into it. I mean, and there's a tremendous fascination not only with the show, but with the whole process of live 90 minutes every week. I think most people are aware that it's a tremendous chore. I mean, it's just a tremendous undertaking.
I would not do television unless this was live. Like,
yeah, there's no way.
The slime prime time stuff is not for me or for us. We don't do that stuff. Mm-hmm. Live TV is exciting.
There's a risk there.
Tape TV is not
a risk.
Exciting.
I mean,
a live album is exciting to do. A live show is exciting to do. Exciting to hear. That's why this album is exciting.
I guess who people knows? Pretty well know that we're, you know, that he's Jake and I'm Elwood. I know these are the characters, the alter egos we take on, you know, because the whole thing is a theatrical thing. We come from a background of we worked in Second City, which is an improvisational theater school. I might say it's a school because it teaches you how to write on your feet. You know, we used to go out. I mean, the process is very simple. We'd do a set show and then go out and improvise after that. Is go out to the audience, and one actor would go out and say, okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do some off-the-cuff scenes. Give us an occupation. Some guy yells out, lawyer. Okay, give us a place.
A bathroom.
Right. In a bus station, you know. Right. So then we proceed to do a scene about a lawyer in a bathroom of a bus station.
Can I try it with you
right
now?
Off the... Those days are past.
Okay.
I mean, there were...
Okay.
Those are,
just
you know,
asking.
Because you can die. You can die if you improvise, you know.
Improvising. See, that allowed you, at Second City, they expect you to fail at about half the time.
But the thing is, it taught us how to wear hats and glasses and to work with costumes and to be uninhibited, you know. So, I mean... Really, it's a theatrical thing. Like you know, Greek theater has the mask, you know. Well, the Blues Brothers have the shades and the sunglasses.
And the soul patch.
And the soul patch and the suits.
The suit
is important. It's a uniform, and without it, the act would be nothing.
I'll tell you why the suit came about. I mean, the idea for the suit.
The dark suit, the black
tie. Well, I put this character called Shelley Bayless.
On a piece a couple of years ago. Called Beatnik Cafe,
that
I think
character,
it was.
I don't know.
It was
a minor thing. I did.
We did this Beat Cafe, that's right.
I played the most paranoid comic in the world.
Yeah,
Now what happens with a lot of the paranoid comics and paranoid jazz musicians in the 50s were that there were a lot of them were shooting speed, you know. You know, like Lenny Bruce type guys. And So
they wore shades.
No, they wore shades, but they wanted to look inconspicuous because they didn't want to
and
look
straight. Fun. They wanted to look straight. So they wore suits.
They wore black suits and black ties and white shirts that made them look like insurance men, hoping that they wouldn't draw attention to themselves. And they'd wear these black hats. And they always wore sunglasses day and night, you know, with these little soul patches on their lip.
They blew their cover with it.
So they thought, so they draw attention, you know. It'd be 1 o'clock in the morning, they had these dark shades on. So it basically looks like a 50s hipster junkie.
Yeah, but it also could be, the Blues Brothers also with the suits and the car they drive, which is an old Dodge Police Interceptor. They look like cops.
Cops?
They look like hitmen. They look like chauffeurs, like limousine chauffeurs with the dark suits.
They look
you
like
know?
Rabbis. Some guy thought.
They look like Hasidics, you know.
Hasidic Jews, right?
There's so many dimensions to the costume, but the fact is that the simple thing is that Jake and Elwood aren't any of those things. They're just like musicians, you know. It's like, you know, they may look threatening or straight or heavy, but they really just want to play the music.
And now we continue with our conversation with Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi. And we're talking about the relationship between Saturday Night Live and the NBC censors.
So are there any really funny fights? I mean, like a story?
Oh, there are wonderful meetings where you know, Lauren is there and the censor and then the supervisor of the Standards and Practices branch and then, you know, his supervisor and maybe a vice president
maybe
of programming.
A lawyer.
And they're all sitting there and it's talking about Pussy Whip, you know. It's, you know, deciding whether Pussy Whip should be a commercial or not or, you know, what is it? You know, it's like...
Pussy Whip was for cats. It was the...
Yeah, it was the dessert topping for cats. I mean, you know,
Colonel Lingus.
It's great.
That's right, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
That's right. So that's what they talk about there, you know. And they sort of adjust their ties nervously and flinch and smile. It's really great.
It's a good fun. It's a wholesome show. It really is. I mean, you know, it's...
No way!
It's... Who cares?
Oh, it is.
You don't like it, turn it off.
We explain, you know, the context in which something's written, and if they disagree with it and think that, you know, certain words like bulges or head cream or Blowmaster. I mean, I've mentioned hair products here, you know, really, you know. Blowmaster and head cream, they're hair products, folks,
that's
you know.
Right, that's right.
And if she doesn't think they're hair products, or he, the other guy, doesn't think they're hair products, well, they, you know, they'll object to it, and sometimes we lose with them, sometimes we win. And hey, bartender.
I said, went balling the other night, you know, started drinking, and got,
each and all my friends, which
felt
means
so good, I had to blow again.
Yeah, I mean,
and he came up to me to
meant
me
that he bought them all a drink. That's what the lyric means.
So it really means.
Yeah,
it really means that. But, you know,
they thought it was something, well,
something
don't
else.
Need to edit it out of this radio program because you're just...
You're not going to...
That's right.
Well, I mean, it's on the record. Floyd Dixon does it.
I get the feeling that out of all of the not ready for primetime players, you two are
our
like
homos.
Maybe really close, really close friends.
Yes.
When did you two meet? Do you go back a long way?
We met up north...
Briefly, yeah. You know, and backstage at Second City briefly, and I think we did a couple of sets at Second City. That is where we improvised together. And,
up there at the time, yeah.
And, John, I think he wanted me for the radio show. You wanted me to come down, for the National Lampoon radio show, and I...
That's a record album.
No,
the show.
Yeah,
it was
a
syndicated show.
That's right.
Show. It was on about 200 stuff.
Good humor,
and
good
I was
stuff.
The director of it, and I wanted Danny Honor, you know, and he'd come, and Gilda came, and Billy came. And I guess we, thrown in the situation, we went toward each other as more or less protection, you know? I mean,
yeah, when we were being sort of up for the job and they didn't want us and we weren't sure what was going to happen.
So we kind of... I
crashed at his house, you know, and...
For about 4 months?
Well, actually, for the first year of the show...
Wasn't sure if it was
almost... I wasn't sure whether... none of us were sure it was going to go past 7 shows, so... He had a slab of foam there at his place and, you know, it was in the closet and he rolled it out and I just... bunked in there, you know, and crashed at his place, and, you know, the cats picked at my feet at night, and,
yeah.
I mean, joys of joys, you know, it was, but it was wonderful, and Judy, his wife, was an angel in human form.
I mean, it wasn't my wife then.
That's right, I guess, no, because you just got married, yeah, but, you know, you're an old lady or whatever, you know, she just, you know, treated me fine like I was a brother, and...
We worked out real good. Like, you know, Dan and I would get sick of the show, and we'd get a driveway car, and
you know, like a car you delivered to someone on the West Coast.
You know, we We'd take it and just burn across the country in 3 days with the CB radio just to get away from everything. And then it was kind of, you know, we weren't that well-known, you know. Mm-hmm. And we did a couple trips across
the country. We spent a lot of time on the road and, you know.
On the road, you know. And
I think we think alike. I think
would that be hard to do now, being as well-known as you are? Would it be a hassle wherever you
are? No, you just put it to the floor.
You just don't stop.
You don't stop. We don't stop, you know. I mean...
That's the essence, you know.
So, like, part of the Blues Brothers comes out when we were on the road. We talk about song, we play music, you know. I get a tape deck and just, you know, crank it up and listen, and that was fun, you know. He'd drive like a madman, and
he turned me on to the Allman Brothers, and I turned him on to Ride of the Valkyries, Wagner, you know, which he'd never heard. As we were sailing across the Nevada mountains, you know, just fantastic. I mean, it was a revelation.
Yeah, I did that in the that one show. Was it the Ray Charles? So we're listening to great music. We're just
The Phonograph. Yes,
the Phonograph. They didn't know I was going to do that on the air because I was. See, sometimes you don't know what we're going to do until we get there, until we're on the air. I go, oh, God, how am I going to end this thing? And I start riding about curious and go, horses, you know, da-da-da, this and that, and then screaming and going into lines from combat, you know, throwing things. And then there was a stereo. And I don't even know how much it weighed. It must have been 200 pounds. And I finally picked it up and threw it on the ground to end the scene. I said, well, sorry, I didn't know how to end it.
Yeah, you should try to catch the act because Belushi, the moves. I mean, really.
Look at the dance of this. You do.
Oh,
so
I know,
bad.
But I mean, you know, your flips and everything, and geez.
Wish
it's
you could
great.
Do flips on the radio. Would be great.
Well, the thing is,
you can hear his dancing in Soul Man. In the middle, they start cheering, and that's because Danny's dancing. I've moved back. You know, whoa! I can't believe it.
Does the kind of burnout factor, we'll call it, does that ever...
No.
Do you ever think about that? Like,
no.
How fast people use people up these days? I mean,
no. We'll just
TV
have
stars,
to see. You know?
Who knows, man?
We'll just
Look,
have to see.
You don't go into it. I mean, we'd go into... there's a burnout factor in terms of using the media. I mean, this is one of the few interviews...
this is what I mean.
This is one of the few interviews we're going to do. You know?
The whole idea of promotion is an interesting subject.
Yeah,
because some people believe that without promotion, the greatest talent in the world will not get
known. I'll tell you, I think so. I think it's true.
I don't think so.
Oh, definitely, definitely. No. I think there's some artists that would never have been discovered if it weren't for proper promotion and handling, sure.
Like, I don't feel like you should do it all the time to promote yourself. Yeah. I can promote this. I'll promote the band, the Blues Brothers, you know, Danny, you know what I mean? In a way, using myself to promote them.
Excellent.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know what I mean?
I am.
Danny is a harp player, you know? Danny's doing me as a vocalist, you know what I mean? It's like, you know.
Yes, but we are under the bear man. So we call him the bear man sometimes because he gets up in the morning, you know. But we are under your umbrella. I mean, I think the Blues Brothers came about because of his doggedness and his drive. He pulled these people together, you know? We chose the songs, and it was like, you know, it was... A real common effort, but mainly led by John. You know,
it came out of trust. The people saying, you know, you say it was real nice to know. They said I wanted to do something. You know, the people say, okay, we'll do it. They weren't sure what it was. I knew what it was. I knew exactly what it was going to be.
But they all showed up on that first day of rehearsal.
They
all
because,
came to learn the material and
because it was Danny
and, do it.
And it was me because they said, well, if nothing else, I'll have a good time.
This is Steve Cropper, Doc Dunn,
you know,
Matt Murphy,
Tom Scott, Alan
Tom
Rubin.
Scott, Alan Rubin. Tom Malone,
Steve
Jordan, Paul Schaefer, and Lou Marini.
Blue.
Okay.
So they had faith in us and joined us. And
and once they do that, you don't let them down. You know, once you don't let them down, mm-hmm. you know, you have to build a kind of a reputation in the business to do that. Once people screw you, you know, that's what happens. That's the thing about it. That's why people get burned in this business. Because there are a lot of bastards out there, man. A lot of them.
A lot of people looking to rip off and exploit.
That's all they want. That's all they care about is money, stuff like that. And they'll use any artist, you know, and it makes me mad. I mean, really mad to see what it does to a lot of artists and a lot of people and a lot of women in the business and things like that and how they're used, you know, and how they can't really get a break, you know, unless they're sleeping with a photographer or a director or stuff like that. People who, you know... can't just go on just kind of on their merit, you know. I think that something should be done about that in this business. I don't think we should just sit back and let these people go on. I think they should be exposed and be thrown out.
Would you consider yourself an anarchist?
A disciplined anarchist, yeah, sure. I'm an anarchist.
I guess we have to.
I feel that one thing I'm not is a professional. I'd rather be an anarchist than a professional.
You're
anarchist is one thing. I'm also an artist. I'm also, you know, a good friend. I'm also a troublemaker. You know, I'm also motivate. I like to motivate
decent
people.
Touch football player.
No,
a good swimmer.
You know,
a bad driver.
But
a party maniac.
Yeah. Because I think there are too many people just kind of sitting down letting things happen. If you shake things up a little bit, it creates new areas.
Well, they'll never accuse you of not shaking things up, John. I mean,
too many professionals.
Really,
screw them.
Really.
Get rid of them.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. I know that this is a rare kind of thing to just sit and talk into.
It is, matter of fact.
So thanks a lot.
It's okay. Thank you. It was very good.
See ya.